سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا محمد وعلى آله وأصحابه وأمته وبارك وسلم. فقد قال الله سبحانه وتعالى: فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. مروا بالمعروف وانهوا عن المنكر. Last week we introduced the subject of the Sydney siege, and we emphasized how many people on both ends of the political spectrum are being radicalized by Australian foreign policy, and in particular Australia's unconditional support for the United States military misadventures in the Middle East. And we also emphasize how our disgust at what happened in Sydney as Muslims should not stop us from having an honest and grown up and mature debate about Australia's failed foreign policy and where it has led the country. It's important that we engage our Australian compatriots and that we discuss this issue openly within our sphere of influence, and emphasize that what is happening in the world and what happens, unfortunately, every so often in Australia, has more to do with failed foreign policy than with this phantom of Islamic extremism or terrorism. We also went on to talk about this ritual that each and every one of the world's billion plus Muslims, especially those living in Western countries like us, this ritual where we expected immediately following any incident of violence involving a Muslim perpetrator to apologize. And I introduced the issue emphasizing that this expectation is at the very least Islamophobic. What Muslims and Muslim organizations, including myself, and I was also asked, and I did in fact, but upon reflection, in retrospect, I should not have. But what we expected to say is, as a Muslim, or as a Muslim organization, or an imam within the Muslim community, I condemn this act of terrorism, or any such act in any form or in any way perpetrated in my name or the name of my religion. Now, this denunciation is actually a form of bigotry. It's an apology for Islam and for Muslims. And the implication, as soon as we make that apology, is that every Muslim is under suspicion of being sympathetic to terrorism unless he or she or that respective Muslim organization or that respective Muslim community says otherwise. And that's essentially what it boils down to. It's racism in another form. And Australia has a very tardy record with racism. And you would have thought that Australian society, the Australian government, and Australian intelligentsia would be much more cautious when delving into this matter, considering they have a very unadmirable record with racism. The implication is also that any crime committed by a Muslim is the responsibility of all Muslims simply by virtue of their shared religion, which is ridiculous. Now, this sort of thinking, blaming an entire group for the actions of a few, assuming the worst about a person or a group of people simply because of their identity, is the very definition of racism and bigotry. There's no other definition. But it's surprising how the Australian establishment has embraced this new racism. And there's been no comment or no critical analysis of this expectation on the part of mainstream Australian society for Muslims to apologize or to condemn. Now it's time for that ritual to end. Non-Muslims in all countries, and today especially those in Australia, should finally take on the correct assumption, and we need to tell our friends and our neighbors about this. That what you guys need to do is to assume that Muslims hate terrorism just as much as you do. And they must stop expecting Muslims to prove their innocence just because of their faith. Like I said, Australians have a dreadful history when it comes to this. They should have learnt. Unfortunately, it's the same beast re-emerging again in a different form. And it needs to stop, and they need to be educated, and they need to realize that they are behaving in a very ignorant way, in a very offensive way. Many of them don't realize this, and it's up to me and you to try to inform and guide and instruct them. Now, it's only because of this bigotry and racism that this ritual still exists. And it's not just in Australia, it's in every Western country, unfortunately. Which means that if we maintain that ritual, we also become complicit in the bigotry. Otherwise, Australian society wouldn't expect Muslims to condemn this Harun Monis. None of us know him. It's like Osama bin Laden. Before CNN introduced us to Osama bin Laden, no one knew him. I'm an imam and a sheikh and intimately involved with the Muslim community, not locally but globally. We know ulama and scholars and prominent men of the religion across the world. And I was introduced to Osama bin Laden by CNN. Similarly, this fool, Harun Monis, he's clearly a deranged person, at least if we go by the conventional narrative in the media. But the fact of the matter is that he has no formal affiliation with any formal religious group. And it would be absurd to expect the Muslim community to apologize for a person who is already on the fringe, whom no one even knows. It's ridiculous. It's like, for example, expecting Christians to condemn Timothy McVeigh. And I challenge you, ask Christians in your community or your neighborhood if they know Timothy McVeigh. 99 out of 100 won't know him. But Timothy McVeigh was responsible for blowing up federal buildings in the United States, a devout Christian. So, in the same way that as Muslims we don't expect Christians to apologize for the terrorist activities of Timothy McVeigh, it's ridiculous for them to expect us to apologize for Harun Monis. Similarly, if someone blames all Jews for the act of extremist Israeli settlers in the West Bank, I guarantee you the Australian establishment and Tony Abbott, right at the head as a cheerleader, would immediately and correctly reject that position. That you can't blame all Jews for, you know, the terrorism or the criminal behavior of some settlers in the West Bank. And this is a prejudiced assumption to make. And they'll trumpet it at the tops of their Murdoch voices. So the Australian establishment understands, they do, they are intelligent, that such an accusation is hateful and that it's wrong, but not when it's applied to Muslims. And this is where their racism and their bigotry becomes patently evident for everyone to see, including the likes of people like Tony Abbott. Now, this is a different set of standards that they, in other words, the government, the media, and many, unfortunately, in Australian society, apply only to Muslims. Now, the media has played a significant role in maintaining this ritual, and also with that, the prejudice ideas behind this ritual. It's a subtle way of indoctrination and brainwashing, basically. But it also includes even well-intentioned media outlets and reporters who broadcast Muslims, at least, and Muslim organizations, at least, unfortunately, when they condemn these acts of extremist violence. I've actually had a Muslim organization who called me to participate in a night vigil where 132 candles will be lit for the victims of the dreadful terrorist slaughter of children in Pakistan during the week. And I was appalled that that request was made from me. The reason simply is because we expected to condemn an act of violence when it's perpetrated by Muslims, but the tens and hundreds of thousands of Afghans and northern Pakistanis who have been butchered by the American army and the complicity, obviously, of the Australian army, daisy cutter bombs and radioactive munitions used against civilian populations, Those tens and hundreds of thousands don't deserve a night vigil. And this is a Muslim organization that has made this ridiculous request, which reaffirms this notion that Muslims are inherently violent, unless we otherwise distance ourselves from that notion. So if we look even at some of these well-intentioned media outlets, Sydney Morning Herald is an example. There's no question that their coverage sometimes earnestly is designed to combat Islamophobia, to promote equal treatment of Muslims. So I'm not being too unforgiving in my assumptions regarding certain quarters within the media or government for that matter. But all the same, this coverage ends up cementing that ritual condemnation as a necessary act. Muslims have to do it. And it cements all those racist implications. I've got a few very close friends in government. Even some of them are federal representatives. And they're well-intended, good people, good at heart. They wish the best for the Muslim community, but they fall into the very same trap. They make the very same mistake. And they need to be educated. They need for me and you to tell them that, look, what you're asking is offensive to me. Stop it. So what should happen is that non-Muslim Australians, and dare I say many apologist Muslims and Muslim organizations, should treat the assumptions that compel this ritual, that Muslims somehow bear this collective responsibility, that they are presumed terrorist sympathizers, until proven otherwise, is flatly bigoted, it's racist, it's offensive, and it has no place in civilized society. We claim that this is a civilized society. We claim that this is a rational, intelligent society, a society that's governed by reason. So we need to tell them that, look, this is unreasonable and it's uncivilized. Stop asking us to apologize. Stop asking us to condemn. So there's no legitimate reason for Muslim groups or you as an individual Muslim to condemn Harun Monis, and I guarantee you there's going to be a dozen more Harun Monises to come. Nor is there any legitimate reason to treat those condemnations as news. So news outlets must not publicize this condemnation either. They need to stop and we need to stop. We need to break the cycle. Because, like I said, it's a subtle form of indoctrination. It reaffirms a narrative that ultimately serves geopolitical agendas. And a geopolitical agenda that's determined, unfortunately, by the United States, a foreign government, not even by the Australian government. The Australian government has no independent foreign policy. They are dictated to by the United States, unfortunately. So if you look at Mondays, at least 3 Mondays ago, the hostage standoff in Sydney, the entire Australian media, the political establishment, backed the federal government's announcement of a review. Now, very few of us have actually considered that review. And that review, in essence, is intended to justify a raft of draconian measures, new measures. Like we said last week, that this war on terror is not really a war against Muslims. Muslims have lost everything. This war on terror is actually a war against the peoples of Western nations. It's a war against their freedoms, against their sovereignty, against their wealth, their lands, their hard-won rights and laws that are being jettisoned in the name of a war on terror. We have been utterly and absolutely vanquished and subjugated as a people. And with the destruction of the Khilafah, we have been a subjugated people for almost 100 years. We have nothing more to lose. We've lost everything. They have everything to lose, and they are so blind to it. So what's happened with the Sydney incident is that the Australian government is actually passing draconian new measures, or justifying some of the very draconian measures that they had implemented just this year, at least last year. So from the very outset, if we were actually watching very carefully, we find that that incident was seized on to advance this reactionary agenda behind the so-called war on terror. Basically, support for the United States military operations abroad, and deeper attacks, most importantly, on fundamental democratic rights at home. That's where we find very many organizations, very many non-aligned groups have been quite vocal in their condemnation of the opportunism on the part of the media and the Abbott government, non-Muslim organizations. But you notice none of it has made it into the media. None of you are even aware. So if you look at Abbott's remarks, what basically he did was like the Canadian Prime Minister or Barack Obama or our David Cameron, they all do exactly the same. Is that they attempt to divert public attention, and by public, we're not talking about Muslim attention. We're talking about mainstream West, at least Western society, diverting their attention from the government's own role in manufacturing this national terror crisis under conditions of shock and horror, which will then be used to justify scuttling freedoms and basic human rights and basic liberties of mainstream Western society, not Muslims. We have nothing to lose. So if you look at 2 weeks ago, we find that neither the Abbott government nor the New South Wales state authorities has provided any official explanation for the police storming the Lynn Cafe. For anyone who was watching, it seemed quite absurd. It seemed quite haphazard. It seemed quite unprofessional. We really don't know what happened there. So none of the many questions surrounding the decision to activate the entire, in fact, counter-terrorism apparatus on Monday, 3 weeks ago, have been answered. And many people have been asking why. When you have a single individual and it's a hostage crisis, which is clearly a police issue, why activate the entire security terrorism apparatus? Why do you put the country in lockdown? It's not part of the normal procedure and protocol that is expected of any government, at least any democratic, any accountable government. This seems to be something you'd find more in some type of African tin pot dictatorship. And I'm from Africa, and we know how it works there. So the political purpose seems to be quite evident. If you look very carefully, the whole discussion about this Man Haron Monas allowed the Australian establishment to reopen the debate about refugee status, about unemployment benefits, about legal aid or bail, if not jail altogether, about police surveillance. And what it sought to do, at least to me, as an outside, hopefully objective observer, is to reassert my suspicion that these events are used to justify what otherwise would be untenable and abhorrent policy, which the average Australian would readily reject. But the circumstances, the fertile ground has been created to allow for the rise of a police state and for people to accede and yield to that police state. So I'm not particularly concerned about Muslims, and I'll be very honest. I'm more concerned about our Australian compatriots out there. They are literally being ushered into a new era of Australian politics, the police state. We had a taste of it with Nazi Germany, and you would have thought that Australians who fought against Nazi Germany have learned some bitter lessons from history and the dangers that comes with fascism. But essentially, Australia is entering into a neo-fascist state, a police state. So what we find with Abbott, unfortunately, and I'm no fan of Abbott, in setting up this so-called review, is to stoke every possible right-wing, anti-refugee, anti-welfare, in fact, even anti-law and order issue. That's basically what he's doing. He stirs up fear about further terrorist attacks to justify ramping up the so-called war on terror. He spends billions more in, again, an unjustified invasion of a sovereign nation, Syria, using ISIS again as a pretext. ISIS, who was previously the Free Syrian Army, who prior to that was the or part of the Color Revolution, which ultimately has been orchestrated by, financed by, and trained by the United States and NATO, and Israel, obviously. If you look at ASIO Director General David Irvin, he declared, and this is all in the news, just read it, but we need to actually think about it and then, as Muslims, take necessary precautions, but also warn our neighbors. Sometimes Muslims, we feel that we don't have a responsibility of Amr bil Ma'ruf, commanding what is right. And when it comes to Amr bil Ma'ruf, it's only with Muslims. So we go out in Tabligh for 40 days and we taught about Amr bil Ma'ruf, command what is right, and somehow we've created this notion in our mind that that only applies to Muslims. But when it comes to non-Muslims, we're quite reticent. Now, our Amr bil Ma'ruf is restricted to our own community. That should stop as well. We need to be just as concerned about them as we are about our own. Just as concerned about their well-being in this world and the hereafter, as we are about our own well-being in this world and the hereafter. So we need to sit and think and reflect about what's happening. In our name, unfortunately. So this character, David Irvin, declares that he was particularly concerned about the so-called lone wolf or standalone groups. I'm just quoting him here. Who act independently, who throw off few clues as to malicious intent. And amid a growing drumbeat in the media about the danger of the lone wolf, the commentator of this article goes, the Sydney siege was made to order, to order. In other words, it seems sort of to be contrived in a manner of sense, in a manner of speaking, or very convenient event or incident that further justifies the repressive measures to overturn basic democratic rights and beef up the security apparatus. And ASIO are right at the head of it. If anyone reads the history of ASIO, I strongly recommend, if you're unfamiliar, read the works of the renowned Australian investigative journalist John Pilger. He's produced excellent works, amongst which one is called The Secret Country. Australia, The Secret Country. Read it. Excellent reading. And you'll come to discover what ASIO is all about. It has less concern about the well-being of Australians and more so about guarding the interests of the United States, its geopolitical interests. And we need to tell our Australian friends about this. And the implication of this notion of David Irvin is that the so-called lone wolf or standalone groups who cast off few clues as to malicious intent, what it basically says is that if every individual who throws off few clues does so, it now comes within the scope of ASIO. What are those few clues? Having La ilaha illallah emblazoned on your t-shirt? A clue? So essentially it becomes a very convenient ruse to justify, again, expansion of security and police apparatus in order to stifle freedom and basic democratic rights within society. So it goes without saying that not only is the Murdoch media and the tabloids fully on board, but the same is true of also these so-called liberal media outlets. Again, the Sydney Morning Herald suggested in an article 2 weeks ago that the logical step would be to jail the likes of Monas indefinitely before they can act out their sick plans. If any of you watched the movie in Minority Report, it talks about future crimes. And a person can be prosecuted before he commits the crime. And there's some type of ridiculous, absurd scientific justification, or, in this case, legal justification. And basically, that's what they're saying, that you're guilty until proven innocent, and that you can be indefinitely incarcerated on the least suspicion, unjustified suspicion. So what this newspaper essentially suggests is that, as they, to quote them, it opens a whole new debate about how far society will accept limits to hard-won freedoms of association and expression. Basically what they're saying is, let's scuttle freedoms in favor of security. So this extraordinary statement, for any of you who are actually reading the news, is testimony to the lack of any constituency or any group within the ruling circles in our government for the defense of essential democratic rights, rights for ourselves and rights for our fellow Muslim, fellow non-Muslim Australians. And how is it that as Muslims, we're not at the forefront of this criticism? We're not at the forefront of challenging the government and challenging the security apparatus, which is what, which is an open and egregious violation of basic rights, basic freedoms. In fact, it is a violation of basic laws. It's a suspension of law. So to conclude, if you look at our Abbott government and the media and the state security apparatus, what they seek to do is to deflect attention from central questions that have to be posed. Why was a terrible, no doubt, but relatively straightforward police matter elevated to the status of a national emergency involving the entire security apparatus? At that point, it was possible, according to these perversions of the law, to incarcerate any individual, Muslim or non-Muslim, in Australia indefinitely. Did you know that? That's how far removed we were from democratic social norms and how close we were to Nazi Germany during that siege. And there have been some legal experts that have been questioning why that was so. Also, what was the political purpose of that decision? Why did that decision, why was that decision made behind closed doors? Was it to inflate the war on terror in preparation for greater Australian commitment to the United States and its absurd and illegal conflicts across the globe? Was it to justify deepening the assault on social and democratic rights of ordinary Australians? These questions are never discussed in the media. By its omission and deafening silence, it makes it quite clear that this seems to have been the intent. So to conclude, all I need to say is that as Muslims, we need to assume our responsibility as active, proactive, not reactive, proactive members of society. We need to take what Islam teaches us as champions of truth and as defenders of the rights of all human beings and boldly ask questions and make comment. We need to speak out. And we should never speak out in such a matter, in such a manner whereby we begin to justify or validate prejudices or unwittingly indict ourselves. We need to stop apologizing. And we need to start more actively engaging the society out there. We need to start reading a little more. We need to be a little more critical, not reactionary, but proactively engage the challenges we face. And wallah, any marketing specialist would tell you that there's no such a thing as bad publicity. All publicity is good for your product or your commodity or the service you wish to sell. It popularizes it, it makes it public knowledge. In fact, we find lots of our celebrities deliberately do the most absurd things and sometimes the most dangerous or criminal things just to make it onto the first page because it enhances their marketability. So if anything, this Islamophobia or this hysteria about Islam and Muslims in the media could very cleverly be used to our advantage. We need to use it, but use it in a manner whereby we communicate a positive message and we reflect the true image of what Islam and Muslims are. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us better understanding in hikmah and wisdom. Wa akhiru da'wana anil hamdulillahi rabbil alamin.